Zion Amud Aleph at the first Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Ha'ish shenoldu bo mumin, ein kofen oso lahotzi. This is like the reverse of all the cases we've been talking about the last several days, where the Mishnah now is talking about what if the husband develops some kind of a physical blemish? So the Mishnah says we don't force him to divorce his wife. Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, ba'med dvar mamurim b'mumin haktanim, aval b'mumin hagedolim, kofen oso lahotzi. Rabban Gamliel says that that's only true for small mumin, but if they're very large, they're very obvious mumin, then we do force them to get divorced. Rav Yehuda Tani Noldu, Chia Barav Tani Hayu. There was a machlokes as to what the correct girsa in the Mishnah was. Rav Yehuda thought the girsa is the way that we have it, which is Noldu, namely that the man developed a blemish after the marriage, whereas Chia Barav thought that the girsa should be Hayu, meaning to say the blemishes were already there when they got married. So the Gemara explains, Manda Amar Noldu, Kol Shekein Hayu. The Kasavra Vikibla, Manda Amar Hayu Aval Nodulo. So the opinion that has the girsa of Hayu, that the man had the blemishes prior to the marriage, would obviously say the same for a person who developed the blemishes afterwards, because if the guy had blemishes when he got married, obviously the woman was okay with it and was willing to marry him despite the fact. Whereas if you have the girsa of Hayu, so then that's only the case that we say that we don't force a divorce. That's if the man came into the marriage with the blemishes and the wife was okay with it. But if he developed the movement after the marriage already began, so then that would theoretically be grounds for divorce. Then the Gemara says, Tanan, Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, Bamed Dvar Mamurim B'Mumin Ktanim, Aval B'Mumin Gedolim, Kofen Oso Lahotzi. This was again in the Mishnah. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said, that which we force the couple to divorce, I'm sorry, that which we do not force them to divorce, if the man has a mum, that's only true if it's a small mum, but if it's a large mum, then we force them to get divorced. So the Gemara explains, Bishlam Alamanda Amar Noldu, Hainu Deshani bin Gdolim Liktanim, El Alamanda Amar Hayu, Malik Gdolim, Malik Tanim, Hasavra the Kibla. So the Gemara says, I understand if you think that the girsa in the Mishnah is that the husband developed a mumin after the marriage already begun. That's why there's a distinction between large and small mumin. But if you think that the case is that the husband already had the blemishes going into the marriage, then why does it matter how big or small the mumin are? Obviously, the wife was okay with it if she consented to marrying this guy. So the Gemara says, no. Kisavura hisha yechola lekabel, va'achshavin yechola lekabel. It could very well be that initially the wife thought that she could handle this blemish, and then it turns out that she really can't. So the Gemara says, even within that girsa of hayu, that the guy had the blemishes beforehand, you could still distinguish between large and small movement. Okay, then the Gemara says, ve'ilu ein mumin gedolim, pirish rabban shimon ben gamliel, could go nismes eno, nikta ayado, v'nishbara raglo. The Gemara gives three examples of what's called a very large or significant mum. One is if the man became blinded, he was blinded in an eye, or if his hand or if his leg was amputated or broken or something like that, that's considered to be a very significant mum. Itmar, Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov Amar Rabbi Yochanan Halacha Ki Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel, Rava Amar Rav Nachman Halacha Ki Divrei Chacham. There's a machlokas how we paskin. In other words, that distinction in the Mishnah that we drew between large and small mumin, so that distinction was only mentioned by Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel. The Chachamim never mentioned that. They never said that there's any sort of distinction between large or small mumin, so there's a machlokas whether we paskin like that distinction of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. So asks the Gemara, Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Achi, V'ha'amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'chom Makum Sheshana Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel B'mishna Seinu Halacha Kemoso Chutz Me Arev V'tzidon V'raya Acharona. So the Gemara has almost a textual question. Here the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan paskins like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, that there's a distinction between the large and small movement. Now the question is, why does Rabbi Yochanan have to go out of his way to tell us that he paskins like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel? It should be intuitively obvious that that's the case. In other words, the Gemara should not have to go out of its way to tell us that. Why is it so obvious? Because there's a famous idea in the Gemara, which the Gemara quotes this idea in many, many places in Shas, that, again, this is quoted in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that every time there's a machlokas between Rabban Shimon Gamliel and someone else in a Mishnah, we always paskin like Rabban Shimon Gamliel, except in three places. This is not one of the three. What are the three places that we do not paskin like him? So the first one is Arev. Arev is a sugya that appears at the end of Maseches Bava Basra, where there's basically a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan, where there's a machlokas in the Mishnah about the following. Let's say Reuven comes to borrow money from Shimon, but Shimon is unwilling to lend him money because Reuven doesn't have a great credit score. He's not sure that he's going to pay him back, so he has to go get Levi as a cosigner, as a guarantor, as what's called an arev in halacha. So there's a machlokas: is Shimon allowed to automatically go to Levi to collect that money and say, I'm just going to skip over the lova, or not? So that's a machlokas. So in that case, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that you're not allowed to do that. You have to go to the lova first. And only if he doesn't have money, then you go to the Arev. So we do not paskin like that. That's one of the three cases where we do not. The second case where we do not paskin like Rabban Shimon Gamliel is called Sidon. Sidon was the name of a city. This is a sugya that appears in Maseches Gittin, where the Mishnah tells us that a man, that a man basically gave some sort of coat to his wife, and then they ended up losing the coat. So basically, the question was that he was going to divorce his wife, but the question was, would the divorce be valid? But do they have to compensate for the value of the lost coat? So again, that's also machlokes, whether he has to actually give the actual item back or have to compensate for it. And then the third case where we do not possibly give is a sugya in Sanhedrin called Raya Acharona. This is a whole sugya about basically where does evidence end when it comes to court cases. So for example, let's say Bezdin gives you, let's say you're one of the litigants in a court case, and Bezdin says you have 30 days to bring any sort of evidence that you want to back up your claim. So once the 30 days are over, so then that's it. But according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he says that's just arbitrary. He basically says that the only time that we put a stop on a person's ability to bring in more evidence is if the guy says, this is my final proof, this is it. And then 3 days later, he comes and says, no, I was just kidding, this is it. So then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, then we don't believe him. So the Gemara says, we don't passing like that. So again, the point here is that those three cases are the exceptions. Those are the three times we do not passing like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Our Mishnah is not one of those three. Why then did Rabbi Yochanan feel the need to tell us that we passing like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Of course we passing like him. So the Gemara says, no, Amoraim ninu ve'aliba de Rabbi Yochanan. There were two different versions within the Amoraim as to how Rabbi Yochanan passing. So that's why the Gemara had to specify it, because other versions had him actually disagreeing with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and that's why the Gemara had to actually specify it. Okay, says the Mishnah. The Elu Shekofen Oso Lahotzi, Mukeshchen, Uval Polipos, Vahamekamets, Vahametzarif, Nechoshes, Vehaborsi, Bein Shehayu Achelo Nisu, Vein Misha Nisu Noldu. So the Mishnah gives you specific examples that are grounds for divorce. So if, let's say, for example, the man is what's called a Mukeshchen, he has some sort of, he's covered in boils, he's very unattractive, or he's a Val Polipos. We'll see in the Gemara in a second what that term means. Or the guy, he gathers, or he smelts copper, which again, the Gemara's going to talk about these terms in a second. Or he works in a tannery. He does jobs where he comes home and he smells horrible every single day. So the Mishnah says those are grounds for divorce, whether those professions or those activities were in existence before he got married or even after he got married. In all cases, those are grounds for divorce. Yal kula nama Rabbi Meir af al pi shehisna imam. And Rabbi Meir adds that in all of these cases, even if the woman consented to marry the guy who was the tanner or the copper maker, and then she realizes 2 years into the marriage that she's just not able to withstand the smell, she's also able to back out of the marriage, and that is grounds for divorce. The Chachamim say that once the woman consents to the marriage, she's never allowed to back out and claim that, you know, after the fact that, you know, that I didn't realize I couldn't withstand it. The only exception to the Chachamim is the Mukeshchin. Because a Mukeshchin, a guy who's covered in boils, so the assumption is that his flesh is going to deteriorate. It may actually physically impact the woman during relations. So that could be grounds for divorce, even according to the Chachamim. But all other cases, they say once the woman agrees to the marriage, she's not able to back out anymore. Maise betzidon bevursi echad shemes, v'hayelo ach bursi, amru Chachamim yichol lehi shetomar, l'achicha hayisi yicholo lekabel, u'lecha ini yicholo lekabel. There was an incident where a woman was married to a tanner. So again, the guy had a job where he came home smelling disgusting every day, and then her husband died without children, so now she fell in Yibum to his brother, who was also a tanner. So the Chachamim said that the woman could theoretically say that even though I consented to marry your brother, the tanner, I don't have to agree to marry you, and she can insist on getting chalitza. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "My bal polipus, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel Reacha Chotem, b'masnisa tana Reacha Pet." There's a machlokas what that second term in the Mishnah, bal polipus. So one opinion says it means that his nose smells bad, and the other opinion says that means that his breath smells bad. Rav Asi masne ipcha umanach basimana Shmuel opasek pume mikule pirkin. And then Rav Asi reversed the shitos, where Shmuel said it means that your breath smells bad, and the Brisa says it means that your nose smells bad. And the mnemonic device to remember who says what is that Shmuel's mouth never stops moving in this perek, which is an allusion to the idea that he thinks that polypus is a reference to bad breath. Okay, then we said v'hamekamets. My mekamets. Amar Rav Yehuda zehamekamets tzoas klavim. That's a reference to a person who gathers dog feces and uses it to tan and to make into leather and into hides. So asks the Gemara, meisvei mekamets zeburzi. Doesn't the Braisa say that a mekamets, that a gatherer, is a tanner? So then why does the Mishnah have them listed as two separate cases? So the Gemara then asks, v'litameich tikshelecha masnisen, ha-mekamets v'ha-metzarif nechoshes v'ha-bursi. So you can ask a question on the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah lists mekamets and bursi as two separate categories, but if it's the same thing, why are they listed separately? So the Gemara says, pishla masnisen lo kashya, kan bevursi gadol, kan bevursi katan, elo l'rev Yehuda kashya. So the Gemara says, I understand that the Mishnah, you can explain that one case is talking about a person who works in a large-scale tannery, where he's much more likely to smell horrific when he comes home, whereas the other case is referring to a guy who works in a very small local tannery. But the question is, according to Rav Yehuda, why does the Braisa list them as two separate cases? So the Gemara says, Tinahi, Desanya, Mekamit, Zabursi, Vyesh Omrim, Zah Mekamit, Tzoas Klav. There was a machlokes what exactly the term Mekamit means. One opinion says it means a tanner. The other opinion says it means the guy who's gathering the dog feces in order to process and make into the hides. Okay, then he said, Vaha Mitzarif Nechoshes, Vaha Bursi. My Mitzarif Nechoshes, Rav Ashi Omer, Chashle Dudei, Rabba Barbar Chana Omer, Zah Mechatech Nechoshes Meikaro, Tanya Kivasei, the Rabba Barbar Chana, Izu Mitzarif, Zah Mechatech Nechoshes Meikaro. So again, there was a further machlokes what a Mitzarif Nechoshes is. So Rav Ashi says it means the guy who beats copper to make it into kettles. He's basically a coppersmith, and again, the assumption is that the copper smells bad, whereas Rabbi Bar Chana says it's more than that. The guy actually is the guy who goes into the ground and starts, you know, mining and hewing for copper, so that's a guy who smells bad because he's always working, you know, because he's always working in the dirt. Amar Rav, Ha'omer Eini Zon Ve'Eini Mefarnes Yotzi V'Yiteng Ksuba. Let's say a guy says to his wife, I'm not going to support you, I'm not going to give you any sort of food or parnasa or mizonos, so that's grounds for divorce, and of course he's going to have to pay her ksuba. Also Rabbi Elazar, Amar L'Shmaita Kameh D'Shmuel, Amar aksua sari le'elazar achakofenos olahutzi yichpuhu lazun. So the Gemara commented that Rabbi Elazar said over his statement to Shmuel, and they said about this statement, you should feed barley to Elazar, which is basically another way of saying that Rabbi Elazar's statement is nonsensical. Why are you forcing them to get divorced if the husband is refusing to support and sustain his wife? Just force him to support her. Why force them to get divorced? So the Gemara says, v'rav ein adam darim nachash b'chfifa. What would Rav's response to that be? His response is that you can't live together with a snake in a basket. Meaning, in other words, even if Bez then this time is going to compel the husband to support his wife, at the end of the day, it's not a viable living situation if every 5 days Bez then has to come and say to the husband, you have to support your wife. So that would be grounds for divorce. Then the Gemara says, Kisalik Rabbi Zera, Ashkechela Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefes, the Yosef, Vika Omar Lam Yishmeid, Rabbi Yochanan, Omar Le, Aldak, Sua Sarin Le Elazar Bebavel. So the Gemara comments that, again, this was the context of the statement where the Gemara said that they fed barley to Elazar in Bavel. Again, another way of saying that Rabbi Elazar's statement was considered nonsensical. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Asi, Ein Ma'asin Elo Lefsulos. Comes the Gemara and says, the only time that we compel divorce in Halacha is if the man was married to a woman that halachically speaking he wasn't allowed to marry. This is against what we saw in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, if you marry a guy who has a job where he smells bad, that's grounds for divorce. Now the Mishnah says, no, the Gemara says it's only grounds for divorce if you mamish marry someone who he wasn't allowed to marry. Ki Amrisa Kameh Deshmul Amar, Kigon Almar Lechoin Godo, Lugusha Vachalutza Lechoin Hedjo, Mamzer Asunusin Eli Yisrael. Then the Gemara has a further machlokas what exactly that means. So first the Gemara rattles off all the classic examples of people that you're not allowed to marry that we're familiar with. An almana can't marry a kohen gadol. A grusha can't marry a kohen hedjo. Right? A regular Jew can't marry a mamzer or a Jewish woman or a Jewish man can't marry a mamzer, etc. But the machlokas is what about the following case? What if a regular Jewish man married a regular Jewish woman, there's nothing wrong with any of the with any of their lineage, but it happens to be that neither of them have had children and it's been 10 years. Again, we spoke about this back in Yevamos, if you remember. There's a whole discussion about this, whether the couple needs to get divorced. So now the question is, even though that couple is supposed to get divorced, are we now going to compel the divorce? That's the machloka. So according to the first opinion, according to Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav Asi, so he says that in that case, we do not compel divorce. Whereas Rav Tachlifa says, no, in that case, even in that case, we're going to compel them to get divorced. The Gemara explains, Tanan, Elu shekofen oso lahotzi, mukesh chinu valpolipa. So again, the Mishnah gave examples where there's forced grounds for divorce. You know, the guy who's covered in boils, or the person who either smells bad or has bad breath, all the examples that we gave in the Mishnah. So bishlema l'ravasi, durabanan katane d'oraisa lo katane, elu l'rav Tachlifa baravimi, lisne nasa isha v'shaha ima esr shanem v'lo yalda kofen oso. So the Gemara has now a textual question. So I understand the formulation of our Mishnah according to Rav Asi. Rav Asi did not, in other words, he says that our Mishnah was only listing examples that are derabanan, right? There's no isser in the Torah for a man who works in a tannery to get married, right? There's obviously no such isser. So the Mishnah only lists examples that are problematic mi derabanan that are grounds for divorce. It's not going to start listing all the examples mi deoraisa, like an almana to a kohen gadol, a grusha to a kohen hedjo, as we know. However, the question is, according to Rav Tachlifa, that a man who's married to a woman and hasn't had a child in 10 years, that's grounds for divorce, that's only a din Rabbanan. That's not a din d'oraisa. So the question is, why did that case not make it into the Mishnah according to Rav Tachlifa? That's only midrabbanan. Why is it not in the Mishnah? So the Gemara said,
Rabbi, I have a question.
Sure. Yeah.
Why why do we make him get divorced in that case? In those days, they could always marry another woman.
Ah, it's an excellent question. It's an excellent question. Tosfos actually asks that question, but he says that because midrabbanan, the din is that after the chirim of Rabbeinu Gershom, you're not allowed to do that anymore. So you're right. Technically speaking, midoraisa, you were allowed to marry multiple women, but once the chirim of Rabbeinu Gershom went into effect, so that was no longer a viable option. Very good. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, lo kashya, habemile habeshute, comes Rav Nachman with the following distinction. He says, it's true that in both cases, you do have to force a divorce, but the question is, what does it mean to force? So, there's two ways to quote unquote force something. Either you could be verbal about it, you could try to persuade the couple to get divorced, and then there's what's called shute. Shute is basically you could physically beat up the couple, the husband, whatever, to actually physically compel them to get divorced. So the Gemara says, that which we said, that you have to, that according to Rav Tachlifa, you have to force the couple to get a divorce if they haven't had a child. So the Gemara says that's something which you actually have to physically compel the guy. Why did they physically compel the guy? Because he's not being mekayim the mitzvah of peru revu. But in the cases in the Mishnah where the woman is just married to a guy who has a job where he smells bad, okay, so that could be her choice. So there we're going to try to talk them out of it, but we're not going to actually beat them up physically to make them not remain married. So asks the Gemara, Maskeflo Rabbi Abba, Bidvarim lo yivaser aved. The pasuk in Mishlei says that a servant is not swayed by words alone. So the question basically is, what use is it to persuade people verbally? It's not really going to do anything. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo amar Rabbi Abba, hava habishutei, hasam ki amra havina bahadei, shavkinan la, hacha afa gav da amra havina bahadei, lo shavkinan la. The Gemara says, you're right. Both cases, we're talking about physical submission. We're talking about physical, physical persuasion. The difference is that in the case where the couple hasn't had a child in 10 years, if the woman says, I want to remain married to my husband, we don't allow that because, again, the man is not able to be mekayim in the midst of peru revu. Whereas in these other examples where she's married to a guy who smells bad or whatever, so if the woman says, I'm perfectly fine, stay married to him, so we're not going to do anything about it because she's not breaking any halakha by doing that, so we're going to allow him to remain married. So then the Gemara asks, V'harei muke shchin, da'afa gav da'amra havina bahadei, lo shavkinan la, disnan, chutz mi muke shchin, mipnesha mimkaso, vikatane. The problem is that one of the examples in the Mishnah was a guy who's a mukeshchin, the guy who was covered in boils, the guy who's physically unattractive. And the Gemara said that in that case, even if the woman says, I want to stay married to him, we don't allow that. Why? Because it's going to actually cause his flesh and theoretically her flesh during relations to deteriorate. And yet that case is still mentioned in the Mishnah. Why is that case mentioned in the Mishnah if that's grounds for physically forcing them to get divorced? So the Gemara says, you're right. Hasam ki amra dayarna bahade besade shav kinan la. The Gemara says that there's a difference. The Gemara says that in the case of the guy who's a mukeshchin, if the woman says, I want to live with him, but with Edim, meaning to say, Edim will witness and we're never going to be secluded alone together, so that's okay. Then we're going to let them stay married. However, in the case of the couple who hasn't had a child in 10 years, so even that we're not going to allow. Even staying married with having Edim watching them all the time, that's also not okay, and we're going to actually force them to get divorced. Okay, says the Gemara, Tanya, Amar Reb Yossi, Sachli Zakein Echad Me'anshei Yerushalayim, Esrim Ba'arba Mukeshchin Hein, The Gemara says that there were 24 types of people who were afflicted with boils, and all of them were adversely affected by engaging in relations. In other words, it physically affected them. And the people who had ra'asan, we'll talk a lot about this in the Gemara coming up right now, ra'asan is some sort of a skin disease that's a function of having some kind of a bug or a worm that was lodged inside of your brain, as we'll talk about in the Gemara in a second. That was the worst kind. So a person who had ra'asan, if they had relations, that was really, really bad for their skin and for their body. So the Gemara asks, Mimai Havi, how did a person get ra'asan? Disanya, he kizdan b'shimesh, havyon l'banim v'sikin, he kizvushneyan b'shimshu, havyon l'banim bali ra'asan. So let's say the man just had bloodletting done, and then he engaged in relations right after bloodletting, he's going to have weak children. If both the husband and the wife got bloodletting, and then they had relations, they're going to have children who have this skin disease called ra'asan. Amar of papa lo amar el de lo toim midi, however, Rav Papa qualifies this and says that's only true if they didn't eat anything. If they ate something after bloodletting, so then their children are going to be fine. Fine. So then the Gemara says, "My simane." What are the signs of ra'asan? So the Gemara says, Dolphan Ene, Vidaive Nechire, Vaisele Rira Mipume, Viramu Didve Ilave. So basically, your eyes tear up, there's your nose is running, there's drool coming out of your mouth, and there are flies that are sticking onto your skin. Umaya Suse, how do you cure Rasan? Amar Abaye, Pila Vilunda. So these are two different kinds of plants or herbs. Girda de Egoza, which is some sort of nut, like the ground shell of a nut. The Girda de Ashba, which is like smooth hides. The Khalil Malka, some sort of a daisy, a flower, whatever. Umaskala de Dikla Sumka, which is like the calyx. It's like part of the opening of a red date palm. The Shalik Luhu Bahad de'adad, you cook these all together. Umayale Levesa de Shisha, you bring the guy with Rasan into a marble house. The Ilo Ikabesa de Shisha, Ma'ayale Levesa de Shav Livneva Aricha. If you don't have a marble house, you bring him into a house that has the thickness of seven bricks and one brick long. The Natale Tlasme Akase Al Reshe Adarafia Arisa de Moche. You pour 300 cups of this stuff onto his head until his head starts to get soft. The Kara Lemoche, you tear open his head. You tear open his, in other words, to you basically almost kind of like lobotomize him. Umaise Arba Tarfe Da Asa. You take four myrtle leaves. Umadle Kolchad Kara. Umosiv Chad Veshalke Betzavse Vekolile. The Ilo Hadar Ilove. And then what you do is you put the leaves underneath the legs of this insect. So this way, when you take the insect out of the brain, you don't scrape the membrane of the brain, and then you have to burn and kill the insect, because otherwise it's gonna grow back again. This is the Gemara's medicinal cure for Rasa. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Machris Rabbi Yochanan, he zoharu mi zavuve shalbali Rasan. Rabbi Yochanan used to announce, be very weary, be very careful of the flies that are flying around the guys at Rasan, because they can be vectors or carriers of disease, and you can get the Rasan too. Rabbi Zera lo hava yasef bezikir. Rabbi Zera wouldn't sit in the crosswinds of a person who had Rasan. He was afraid that he would get it too. Rabbi Elazar lo ayal ba'ahali. Rabbi Elazar wouldn't be in the same tent as a guy with Rasan. Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi lo havu achle mi bei dahi mevoa. They wouldn't eat from eggs that were in the alleyway where a guy with Rasan was located. However, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi michrich behuva asik b'Torah amar ayeles ahavim v'yalas chen imchein mala alom deha agune lo magna. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, he used to go out of his way to stick to people, to be attached to the people with Rasan, and he would learn Torah with them. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Mishlei that there's like a loving gazelle and the doe which shows grace. So if Torah gives grace to its learners, to the people who learn it, then obviously it's going to protect them. The Gemara says, Ki hava shachiv, amru li lemalech hamaves, zil avid le reuse. So the Gemara says that as Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was on his deathbed, so the Chachamim said to the Malach HaMaves, go and do his bidding. In other words, you know, let him die the way he wants, because he was such a big tzaddik. So Azal is chazis, so he appeared to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, amr le, achvi li duchta, he said, I want to see my place in Olam Haba. Amr le lechaya, he said, fine. Amr le havli sakinach, dilma meva asasli ba'orcha. He said, I want your knife that you used to kill people in case you try to scare me on the way. So Yoav Anieli, so he gave him his knife. Kimata lo hasam, dalye, kamach vale, shavar nafal lehahu gisa. So basically, when he showed him his place in Olam Haba, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi tried to jump over the fence, so to speak, and try to actually slip into Olam Haba. Nakde bekarne de glime, and so the Malchavs grabbed onto his coat and said, it's not your time to go yet. So Amar le bishuasa de lo asina. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi took a shvua, I'm not going back with you. Amar kud shabrichu, I itchela shvuasa nihadar, I lo lo nihadar. So Hashem said, if at any point in his lifetime, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi ever had to back out on a shvua, he ever had to find an opening for a shvua, a pretext to undo a shvua, then we're going to undo this one too. But if not, then not. And obviously, they didn't find any such pretext, so he was allowed to go into Olam Haba. Amar le havdi sakinai. So Malcolm just wanted his knife back. Lo hava kayoevli. So he refused to do it. He didn't want there to be any more death in the world. So nafka baskola va'amar le havni ale demisba aliv riyasa. So the baskol said you have to give him his knife back because death is the way of the world. That's the way the world is. Machriz elio kame panu mokum levar levi panu mokum levar levi. So Rabbi Yehoshua. Eliyahu Navi announced, make room for Bar Levi, make room for Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Azal Ashkechel Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Dava Yosef, Atlas Eser, Tachtechi Pisa. You saw Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai sitting on these 13 golden tables. Amar Le, Atu Bar Levi, are you Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi? Amar Le, Hain. Niras Akeshes Biamecha, have you ever seen a rainbow in your days? Amar Le, Hain. He said, yeah, I did. Imkain Iata Bar Levi. He said, ah, if that's the case, you can't be Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. However, the Gemara says, Velohi, Delo Havai Midi, Ela Sover, Lo Achsik Tivusalanashai. In reality, there was no rainbow that appeared in in the days of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. It's just that he didn't want to take credit for it. This is a famous idea, right? Rashi in Chumash and Parshas Noach actually quotes this Gemara, where he says that in the days of Rashbi and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, those are the only two generations where no rainbow appeared, because the generation was of such righteous quality that they didn't even need Hashem's promise of the rainbow to save them. So the Gemara says really there was no rainbow. He just didn't want to take credit for it. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa Shushivina have. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa was friends with the Malach HaMavis. As he was about to die, Amru le Malach HaMavis zil aved leirusi. He said the same thing. the Chacham said, let him decide how he wants to die. So again, he took him and he showed him his place in Olam Haba. So he wanted 30 days to review all of his Torah learning before he took him to Olam Haba. So Shavki, so he left him. So a month later, he comes back. Show me my place in Olam Haba. He said, fine. The same thing that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said. He said, give me your knife in case you try to scare me on the road. He said, what, you're trying to do the same thing that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi did to me by trying to take my knife away? He said, bring that Sefer Torah and look in it. Is there anything written in there that I didn't fulfill? So the Malach HaMavis responded to Rabbi Chanina bar Papa and said, you're not on par with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. You didn't associate yourself with the guys who have Rasan and learn Torah with them, whereas Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was willing to put his life on the line to associate and learn Torah with those people. However, the Gemara says, "Vafilu hachi ki nach nafshe ifsikle amuda denura bein di de la alma." The Gemara says that when he died, when Rabbi Chanina died, there was a pillar of fire that separated between him and everybody else. Ugemire de la masik amuda denura el lechad bedara o lestrain bedara. There's a tradition that only one or two people per generation have a pillar of fire that separate between them and everybody else. Karav legabe Rabbi Alexander. Rabbi Alexander tried to get close to the body. Amar asay b'shul kol chachamim lo ashkach. Asay b'shul kol avicha lo ashkach. Asay b'shul kol atzmacha istalik. So first he said, let the pillar of fire be removed so that the chachamim can honor you with the proper burial, and nothing happened. He said, you should do so for the sake of your father, and then still nothing happened. And then he said, do it for your own honor, and then finally the pillar of fire was removed. Amar abayli afuke mimanda lo kayam. That's to the exclusion of a person who hasn't fulfilled the entire Torah. He was giving mussar to Rabbi Alexander and said, you didn't fulfill every last letter of the Torah. That's why the pillar of fire was not removed. Amar le ravada bar So Rav Ada said to Abaye, no, it's excluding you, Abaye, because you don't have a makkah, you don't have a fence on your roof. That's a pasuk we read it a few weeks ago in Parshas Ki Seitzi, that there's a mitzvah to have a makkah. However, the Gemara says, Vilohi mihava hava ve'ahi shaytahu deshadi zika. He had a fence, it was just knocked down by the wind. And then finally, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, mipenema in bali rasan bebavel. Why are there no guys with rasan and bavel? Then they sha'ochlin teradin v'shosin sheikhar shal hizmi. They eat beets and they drink the hizmi beer. So those things apparently kill any sort of bugs that can lead to Rasan. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan at Neima in Mitzorayim beBavel Menesha Ochlin Shradin VeShosin Sheicher VeRochatz in the Mipras. There's no one with Tzaras in Bavel because they eat beets and they drink beer and they bathe in the Euphrates River, which apparently are all things that heal Tzaras. Hadron.